Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. My name is Shelley, and I am your host for this podcast. I am so glad you've joined me this week because I have Pamela Van Nest on, and she goes by Pam. Pam and I have a really great conversation about self-compassion, and I even had a few aha moments during this conversation. But we talk about Pam wanted to do something more than just sewing or baking during her retirement. She wanted to have a purpose for her retirement. And so she became a self-compassion coach. And during this, we talk about being a lifelong learner, why that's so important, you know, exactly what is self-compassion, and how we having compassion for others helps us have more compassion for ourselves. We also talk about why, you know, the cultural influences and growing up in society create women feeling so negative about themselves and how we can start feeling positive, having more self-compassion, and just loving ourselves more. It was such a great conversation. I hope you'll listen to all of it, and I will put Pam's information down in the show notes so that you can reach out to her. She's got some meditations and other really great freebies on her website. Before I get into my conversation with Pam, I want to remind you we have a Facebook group, 6500 Women. You can join that today. Go down in the show notes. You'll find the link to join there. Okay, friends, on to my conversation with Pam. One of the things I want to start with is on your website, you have a video there that is an intro video of yourself, and you talk about how as you were thinking about retiring, you thought you could sew or you could bake bread, but you really wanted to do something bigger than that. Could you talk about that for a bit and what that process was for you as you were retiring and trying to figure out the direction you wanted to take?
I was a teacher for 38 years before I retired, and in the process of teaching, one of the positions that I had was an instructional coach, because I'd been a special ed teacher for many years. I went into the regular classroom and I tried that, and then I did all kinds of different changes, you know, working with teachers, working with small groups. But this instructional coaching morphed in our board and didn't know really what it was. I knew I was going to help teachers, but it led me, because I'm really curious and I'm a lifelong learner, and I saw this course in the university, coaching in the workplace. I went, okay, I can learn from that, my, you know, professional development. So I took this course with this woman and realized quickly that the kind of coaching she was talking about, you know, being curious and taking the person where they're at, was very different than the kind of coaching that I was doing with teachers. And then, but she provided each one of us in that course with 3 45-minute sessions with a certified coach, and that changed my life. It changed how I thought of myself, because this woman said, Pam, I hear a deep wisdom within you. She said, and I kind of want to call it elder. What does she look like? What does she stand on? In that moment, it was like, oh my God, this woman sees me. She knows. And she, you know, so we coached, and you know, I knew I was within 5-7 years of retirement. Not, you know, what do I want to do? And I was in that zone of, I don't know. And she said to me, it's okay to be in the place of not knowing. And so that gave me permission to experiment. Well, I finished teaching. I thought, no, I'm not going to stop what I'm doing and become a coach. But I did take the fundamental courses. And that taught me about myself. You know, I'd had all these negative self-talking parts of myself my whole career, because I wanted to do what I did well, and I was awful of myself. I learned those are saboteurs, and I learned that there's 2% of truth. And so, you know, just learning that helped develop me, and then I could be more understanding with others. So when I finally did retire, I decided, I hired this coach, actually hired her, and decided this is what I want to do when I retire. I want to finish this certification. So that's how I thought, I don't want to get to be 70 and look back and think, oh, darn, I wish I'd been certified. Here I am at 70, and I am fully certified. And it has given my retirement a focus and a purpose and a richness in learning about myself, but in others. And in starting my business, I met women in my community I never would have been associated with, because as a teacher, it's sort of like, you know, the little cultures that we fall into. Well, I've met women from all walks of life, all different businesses all over my city. And I just think to myself, I never would have done that had I not decided I want to try this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I still bake bread and I still sew. But now I'm finding with the business, it's like I have to carve out time to do those things, because that is my creative side. Mm-hmm. I'm a kitchen experimenter. I love growing seeds and making bread and making yogurt and all of that. So that's how that came about.
Yeah, let's put out there right now, there's nothing wrong with baking bread and nothing wrong with sewing. So don't send me letters on that, but that you could still bake bread and sew when you retire. You know, thank you so much for saying all that, because one of the stories I tell is about my mother, who retired in, she was 62, this was back in the 90s, and she was only retired for a year, and she like literally retired. She retired to her chair, and she died a year later, suddenly. She had some health issues too, but you know, I interview women your age all the time, and it's such a different, when I look at my mom at my age, and the, you know, cause I'm almost 60, and then, you know, women your age, and I'm just so happy and amazed that we're not buying into that traditional sort of retirement. You collect your check, or you bake bread or whatever all day long. So, you know, I really appreciate that you said that, and that you're doing that. I do want to ask you a question. You mentioned lifelong learning, which I think is so critical, because one of the things we talk about a lot is a growth mindset, and that's being a lifelong learner. How important is that for women our age, and then for also the women that you work with?
It's crucial. If we don't have that growth mindset, that openness, then the neural pathways get cut off. I think things change in our brain. And, you know, God bless the women that are much older than I am, that cannot do what they used to do. But so many of them that I know in their 80s and 90s, you know, they are still wanting to know more and learn more. It keeps the brain alive. We know that our brains are we have a plasticity, and that we keep learning until we die. And, you know, it's interesting you said your mom died at 62. My mom did too. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, she had the disease of alcoholism, which, you know, took her out. Yeah. And so she didn't have a chance to retire, so to speak. And, you know, I have lived, you know, 8 years beyond that age of 62. And even with, you know, many, I'm realizing, you know, the mortality, there are lots of people dying in their 60s. And I think, oh, it's too young. We have to live until we can't live anymore. So even if we have chronic pain or an illness, you know, what more can I learn? And there's so much, there's still so much more to learn. And I've always said that, even in my teaching, as a teacher, you know, wherever I'm at, there's still so much more to learn. I'm still learning more and more about self-compassion, which I started, you know, when I started coaching. And I bought another book just to, you know, just to keep my brain going, just keep my mind going. And then I love to share it. I guess I'll always be a teacher.
Yeah.
And I love sharing all of that.
Oh, yeah. I want to really get into your self-compassion stuff because I think it's so important. And it's what you're an expert on. One of the things that I really get irritated by women over 50 in particular, when they say things like, oh, I can't learn new technology, or I can't learn new things. You absolutely can. And that's part of that lifelong learning is you can do that, because, you know, I know that you are a decade older than I am, but you know, we grew up in the time of like rotary phones and you know, Pong. When I was a kid, that little ball, that Atari Pong that went on the TV, that was like, oh my gosh, that's the best thing ever. So we just have such an opportunity, like you're doing right now, to share your wisdom with other women. But if you start saying things like, I can't do this and I can't do that, you won't. I mean, if you say you definitely won't.
That's right.
I'm so interested in the topic of self-compassion, because I think we often, like you say on your website, some of the things I've read in your material, we are so hard on ourselves a lot. You also talk about giving ourselves permission. There's this process that you take women through, and then you align that with their values. So if you could just talk on all those things.
All those things. Great. How many hours do we have?
The floor. You talk as long as you want, sister.
Yeah, the self-compassion, when I first started coaching, I did the business thing because I realized I don't know how to run a business. I know how to run a classroom, but I don't know. And so I worked on that, and they kept asking me, well, what do you give people, Pam? What is it? And I kept thinking about the people, the women that coach with me, and some of the men too. And I realized how hard on themselves they were. And that was, I give them permission to try the new things and to be kind to themselves. And then I heard a speaker, and this is what solidified it. This guy said, what we all need is to be kind to ourselves and have self-compassion. And I was sitting there listening and went, that's what I need. That's the focus. Because self-compassion is being as kind to ourselves as we are to our very best friend and our dear loved ones. And then for me, it's so that we take care of ourselves so that we can take care of others. Because self-compassion isn't only me, just for me. As we learn this process of self-compassion and appreciating ourselves, what happens is, I find, I become more empathetic and more understanding of other people. Because I've been through that. Oh, that's what they're going through. They're feeling this. They may be needing this. I may not be able to fix it, but I can be there in that moment with them. And if I'm really hard on myself, it's an indication. I read this and it bothered me years ago. If I'm really hard on myself, chances are I'm going to be hard on others. And it was sort of like, judgmental on myself, judgmental on others.
Interesting.
That brought me up short. Yeah.
So could we park on that for a second? Is that? Why is that? Do you think that when we're hard on ourselves, don't having compassion for ourselves, we won't have compassion for others? What?
Yeah. I think it involves, it's because of our brain structure. I mean, we have this negativity bias. You've probably heard that before.
Yeah.
And Rick Hansen, who's a psychologist and a Buddhist, he talks about our brains are like Velcro for the negative and Teflon for the positive.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I think about whenever I would get an evaluation in teaching, my principal may tell me 8 to 10 things that he was really pleased about or she was really happy about. And of course, then there was always the things to improve, the things that I was not doing as well as I wanted to, because I'm a people pleaser. And what did I go away with when I left that office? Yeah. The two things. And so that's the negativity bias. Now I understand it. So when I fall into that, I go, okay, that's my negativity bias. Okay, take a deep breath. And that's when I need to be compassionate with myself. That's okay, you know, common humanity. Everybody does that. What I realized was when this statement really, really hit me about if you are hard on yourself, chances are you're going to be hard on others. I began to notice, and I noticed what I was saying to myself, you know, expecting that perfection or finding all the faults. And then I would listen to myself and I would notice, even today, I will see people and automatically my brain will go to something negative. Now what I can do is going, oh, I'm judging. Trying not to be judgmental of myself for judging, but just noticing it. Oh, that was a judgment. And so it's helped me just to sort of be neutral, because I don't know anybody's story. How can I make a judgment on anybody else? I don't know their story. Yeah. But so just noticing that in myself, how I judge others, you know, I might not know anybody, but I'm judging them. It just helps me realize, oh, that's why we do it. And then I can be more empathetic with other people when I hear others do that. You know, what is it I'm needing in that moment? I need to be recognized. I need to be right. Oh, okay, maybe not in this moment. It's that wave, I guess, mm-hmm. of the thought process. So the kinder I am to myself, then when somebody ticks me off and I get over that first, you know, then can I then switch it? Can I take a deep breath? Can I switch it? And just I wonder what they're needing. I wonder what they're feeling at this moment. Which doesn't mean that there are times when, you know, we have to have fierce compassion. And if something is not right, we need to speak up. I don't mean that, but.
What did you call that?
It's called fierce self-compassion.
Okay, I've never heard that term. I'm gonna write that
down. Yeah, Kristen Neff, who is one of the researchers and gurus, I call them. She just wrote a book called Fierce Self-Compassion.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the yin and yang. There's a gentle side and there's a fierce and fearless side. It's the mama bear side.
Oh, okay.
She calls it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just, this is my theory too. The more I understand myself, the more I understand others. And this is something else that it kind of goes into my spirituality. I realized the deeper I understood myself, I felt like I understood my higher power, my creator, God, if you will. And then the more I wanted to understand this being, then the more I understood myself. It was like, it's such a complementary, beautiful spiral.
Well, I think you have to understand yourself in order to have self-compassion. And you talk about that with your three tenets, acceptance, awareness, and action.
Yeah,
awareness,
acceptance, and action. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Those three. Yeah.
So how does that translate into us being more self-compassionate?
Well, it's when you become aware, when I became aware, so I'm going to say you, when someone can become aware of what you're doing. And I'll never forget the time I was aware of sarcasm. My daughter was 7 or 8 or 9, and I was in school, so I was in the office and people had gone home by that time. And I was a sort of aware the principal was in the office, and I really enjoyed this principal. But anyway, I was talking to my daughter and all of a sudden I heard what I said to her in the tone I said it. And it made me think as though I was listening to it from the principal's office. And I went, oh, and it caught me. And part of that, I suppose, was like a people-pleasing thing, but part of it was listen to yourself. Mm. And when I heard that, I went, okay. And so I worked from then on not to be sarcastic. And now, when I am, I will make a sarcastic statement. I will often say, by the way, that's sarcasm. But I don't just use it as a, you know, something to throw it into conversation or to be funny. I'm really aware of that. So when I understood that in myself, I became aware of that. I understood I needed to change it. And so then I worked on the action. And I had to accept the fact that
okay.
This is something that this is part of our language in English. This is part of how we communicate and to say the tough things that we don't want to say directly and kindly. And then when I could accept that, then I could take action on it, which was, okay, I don't really want to do this. And it's work to get rid of it.
Okay. Well, see, that makes perfect sense then. Okay. Yeah. So creating awareness in the things that we do or the habits that we have or what we want to change is really super important. But also we do these things that perhaps aren't, I don't really want to use the word good, but aren't beneficial to us. We have these attitudes or these, or just, you know, I'm addicted to cheese, so it's not really all that great for me, but and then we have to definitely take action. That's one of the things I'm big on. I mean, we can talk about ourselves all day, know about ourselves all day, but if I don't want to get rid of my addiction to cheese and don't take action on that, then I really don't solve anything. And I think it creates this this never-ending circle of, well, I can't change, so therefore I'm a horrible person. And then you just lack that compassion. And then you're never, I mean, it's just like this vicious thing that we get into.
A downward spiral, And as I'm just now, it's popping in my head, realizing this awareness, acceptance, and action in between those spaces, because there are spaces. Awareness is on a continuum. It's not just one thing.
Right.
But when we hit that awareness between the space of awareness and acceptance, that's where we have to apply the self-compassion. And then from the acceptance, that has to be bathed in self-compassion and kindness for ourselves, because we are human beings with an amygdala and we are wired certain ways. And being able to accept that, and then make choices, because each one of these things brings us to choice. And then our actions, are they kind to ourselves? Are they kind to others? And for me, the big thing about self-compassion also is the more kind we can be to ourselves, then we are kinder to others, then they taste that kindness, and then we start that, I hope, that ripple of kindness in the world.
A pay it forward kind of thing.
Pay it forward, beautiful.
Why is it so hard for us women to be compassionate or be kind? Why are we so freaking negative all the time about ourselves?
Well, there's probably lots. There's probably books written on this one.
That's a loaded question. There's lots of things, right?
I think that I have to use me as an example. Our culture, the society, we look at in the 50s when I was growing up, where women were, where we've come, and the struggles that, to say, no, I am equal. But hearing all of those centuries and millennia, you're not equal, that has an impact on us. And so we come from that basis, I guess. I was raised in a religious home. And so the tenets were also that men were more valued than women. If that's beginning to change, but only because women are, holding on to that. I think too that because we are nurturers, we automatically put others forward, and it, whether we're a mother or not, I think we have that nurturing within us, and it's our tendency to do for others, particularly if we do have children or people that we care for. And we're not taught. I was not taught that. I was taught always put others first. And so I would feel guilty if I wanted to put myself forward. And so to me, there's a balance. There's a beautiful balance. So I think that caretaking, and a woman can be in a high-powered professional job or career, and still, does she want to take care of and nurture those under her? Some do, some. I mean, this is not, I can't blanket all women, but the women I found, it's that, and for my religion, it was sacrifice, offer it up, that kind of thing. So no, those messages get in there.
Yeah, I agree totally. And it's a very good point. And I flashed on a story, on a memory that I have talked about before, but I grew up in a family where my grandparents lived up the road, and there was like aunts and uncles everywhere. It was just like what we called Dryman Row. But all the cousins and stuff would go to grandma and grandpa's like for Easter and Christmas and stuff. And the gosh, they were like, my dad has 7 or 8 siblings, so there was always a bunch of us there. And my grandmother and my aunts and my mom would cook the meal, and then the men would sit at the table and eat first, and then the children would eat, and the women would eat in the kitchen. And I was probably about 5, so this would have been 1967 or something like that. Not that long ago, if you think about it. Of course, this was rural Arkansas, so I don't know what they did in New York City in the 60s, but and that was sort of imprinted on me that, mm-hmm. you know, we serve men first. And it's like you were saying, you know, it's not a blanket statement. This is our experiences that we're talking mm-hmm. about. So, but now I'm with Steve, who's 73, who's very independent and doesn't want rely on me to do anything for him. And I'm just like, you can fix your own dinner. So you're a grown ass man, go fix your own dinner, you know? So, but you know, it's so true. And when we look back at our, values and mores and social, you know, our cultural things growing up. And I also remember in high school in the 70s, there was this magazine called 17 that had all those models and stuff. And I didn't look like anything like them. And then that then began that whole negative, well, you're too skinny, your boobs aren't big enough, your hair's not, you know, why don't you have a boyfriend? Oh my gosh, just so many things that cause us to you know, just internalize all that negative stuff. How do we give ourselves permission? You know, I know on your website, and I'm going to put all of Pam's information down below. So make sure you check out, she's got some meditations and some permission slips mm-hmm. and some goodies on there that you can grab that I think will really help you if you're struggling with this issue. How do we give ourselves permission? I mean, it's so hard. I know there's action and acceptance and awareness, but ultimately you have to say to yourself, Shelly, I give you permission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It starts with the awareness, even the very far end of the little bit of awareness, giving ourselves permission. It means realizing that we are worthy and we are worth it. We are worth the change. What is it that we want and what is it that we don't want? And I read, it was a book, and this woman said, list everything you do not want, because if you don't know what you don't want, you can't figure out what you do want. And then beside each one, figure out what it is that you do want. Now, in our lives, and you know, maybe in our family and our family structure, for me, we have to, you know, take everything into consideration. But what is it that I need? Marshall Rosenberg's work, Nonviolent Communication, impacted me a lot because I realized I didn't have the vocabulary for what am I feeling. Maybe it starts mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
What am
yeah.
I feeling? Yeah. All those words. There's a wonderful book you can get out on audiobook. It's called Permission to Feel by Mark Brackett. And that's helped too, because he says we have to become an emotion scientist. And for me, it was starting off with, am I in a high energy or am I in a low energy? Am I in a pleasant feeling or unpleasant? And for me right now, I'm in a high energy and it's pleasant working, you know, energized, talking with you. But first I have to recognize what are all the other feelings in the other quadrants. And then these needs, we have needs. Yes, there's a universal list of needs that all human beings, all primates have. And as I began to understand those and read them, for me, it's like learning a different language. Then I could begin to see where I'm at. What am I feeling? What am I needing? What value is it pointing to? And that's how we begin to make those small changes. Mm-hmm. what we want, what we don't want. But, you know, I'm worth it. And so are the other people that are, you know, in my life and around my life, whether I know them or not. Yeah, it's finding other people that can help you on that journey. We don't do it alone. We don't do self-compassion alone.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I have another thing for you too. I'm just full of questions. Because I think it's, you know, I think it's just such an interesting topic. And as you're talking, my mind is just suddenly realizing these things that I do, because I've always thought I fancy myself a very self-aware person, and I am. But then as you're talking, my brain is like telling me things of that I need to be aware of, that perhaps I'm not as compassionate as I should be. We'll talk about those when we get off the air. I'm not going to talk about them here.
And just be able to just hold that, not fix it, but just hold that in this moment.
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful that now your awareness is that much more open? And then, you know, you're not alone, Shelley. There's probably lots and lots of people thinking.
Yeah.
And even me. I mean, I'm studying this and I realize the same thing. I need to be more kind, you know, to myself. And sometimes I need to be more fierce with myself.
Yeah. Well, you know, I never really have thought much about self-compassion in the ways that you're talking about it. So it's the words you're saying has really opened up some things in my noggin.
Beautiful.
But one of the things I do want to touch on before we finish up is you talk about developing a mindset of compassion, which I am all about the mindset, because where your thoughts go, you go. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the steps we can take to develop this mindset of compassion, whether it's for ourselves or for others?
It starts with noticing. I have a little acronym I use. It's go to Panama. So you pause and you become aware. And it can be just aware of your physical being. Where am I right now in the room that I am in? Where am I sitting? Just becoming that aware. And then being able to notice what's going on within our bodies, embodying it. I think that's a key thing.
Yeah.
What am I feeling now? Because some of us, when I first started this, what am I feeling? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and then just being, you know, is there a sensation within my chest, within my stomach? And then name it. Whatever it is, maybe it's just, I don't like it. Don't know the name, but I don't like the feeling of it. Just being able to name it. And then nurture the need. What do I need right now? What do I need? And then the M and the A are now being able to move forward with awareness. So that to me is how we start. But it just starts with just the incrementally, just very small. Maybe you keep a journal, you know, keeping track of it. When I used to find, when I learned about these saboteurs and my negative self-talk, it helped to write it out. Let that part of you have that voice. What does it need? And it's interesting. You'll fill a page. And I found when I did this exercise that in writing that, there was then almost this other part of me that was more compassionate, more understanding, and gave me some direction. So I think just by deciding to do it is the first step.
Yeah, definitely. And then you take that motion, and then you put that motion into action. So did we talk about everything that, I know you sent me a list of questions. Did we talk about everything that you wanted to talk about, or is there something else that we need to add before we sign off here?
I think we got it all. I can't believe it's been almost an however long it's been.
Yeah, 34 minutes. Yeah, it goes by very quickly, that's for sure.
It does, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This was such a lovely conversation. And I'm not surprised, but I learned quite a bit during this. So I'm quite happy. It was a really great conversation.